In today's podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the Brisbane property market with two of my regular guests, Stuart Williams and Brett Warren. Now, after a number of years of sluggish growth, Brisbane's been one of the strongest performing property markets over the last year, and it's likely to continue to be amongst the top performers over the next few years. And while there's lots of talk about how the 2032 Olympic Games will affect Queensland real estate, you're going to hear our thoughts, which may be a little different to what some others are suggesting. Now, today you're also going to hear that recently Pam and I bought a property in Brisbane, as did Stuart Williams and his wife. Unrelated, of course. And while this isn't a recommendation that you should be buying a Brisbane property, I don't know your circumstances, I think it'll be informative for you to understand the thought process that I went through. Now, by the way, I don't believe Brisbane's the only place to invest in at the moment. In fact, only a few weeks ago, we settled on another property purchase in Melbourne. So even if you're not interested in buying property in Brisbane at the moment, as an investor, I'm sure you're going to benefit from the insights shared by our experts and me. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
While there are many great property investment opportunities in Australia, the Brisbane property market's been receiving more than its fair share of attention recently. Brisbane's been one of the best performing property markets this year, even before the news that it was going to become host to the 2032 Olympics. So will this add more fuel to the fire? Will Brisbane finally enjoy its time in the sun? Or will it remain the poor cousin of the big property markets of Melbourne and Sydney? In today's show, I look forward to discussing the future of Brisbane property with two of my regular guests, independent financial advisor Stuart Williams, who's based in Melbourne and therefore presumably unbiased, and Brett Warren, National Director of Metropole Property Strategist based in Brisbane and therefore presumably biased. Welcome, Stuart.
Hey, Michael. Great to be with you again.
Well, I know that we've both been speaking separately about the strengths of the Brisbane property market, and congratulations to you and Doreen, because I know you've made a commitment to the Brisbane property market recently, and so have Pam and myself. So I guess we're eating our own cooking, which is important for people to know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's important, I think, for me to, if I'm going to tell a client to do something or recommend a client to do something, it's important that I would do it in the same circumstances. And quite often I say to my clients, I'm investing exactly the same way, using the same methodologies, in the same assets as you are. And I think it provides that credibility.
Oh, I think that's really important. And hi, Brett. Look, let's put our cards on the table. Even though you're based in Brisbane and you barrack for one of those football teams that isn't part of the AFL, are you going to be able to be unbiased in our chat today, Brett?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think I can put it aside for one moment. But something must be happening up here if I can get two of the big names to put their money up here. So we must be on the radar.
Well, I'd like to start our chat with a little disclaimer. There are many great investment markets in Australia, so we're not suggesting Brisbane's the only place to invest by any means. In fact, I believe if you want to build a substantial property portfolio, as you grow it, you should diversify, and you should have assets in all our big capital cities, Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. But today, let's just concentrate on Brisbane. So, Stuart, you recently wrote a very detailed blog explaining the pros and cons of investing in Brisbane property market. So let's start with a few of those. What are some of the reasons behind your thinking why investors should, if their budget allows and circumstances are right, consider investing in Brisbane?
Well, population growth is a kind of interesting story, I think, over the last, let's call it 10 years, but it could be even longer than that. In fact, sort of 15 years ago, there was really heavy interstate migration into Queensland from Victoria and New South Wales. So, you know, it's kind of everyone moving up to Queensland. But the thing with interstate migration, typically with Queensland, is that it tends to go to the coasts, Sunshine and Gold Coast, rather than into Brisbane itself. So if we're contemplating an investment in Brisbane, of course, there's flow-on effects and economic effects of that impact. But you know, whether that changes the supply and demand dynamics in particular Brisbane blue-chip suburbs is questionable. The other notable difference was overseas migration. And Brisbane gets a big share of that. And it makes sense, right? Because if I'm moving from overseas, whether that's UK or wherever it might be, compared to Melbourne and Sydney, property prices are relatively affordable. So particularly, I mean, depending on what I'm selling from where I'm coming from, if that's not a multi-million dollar property, it's going to be hard to buy something commensurate in the Melbourne or Sydney market, whereas much more affordable in Brisbane. So it's kind of a good story. The interstate migration went negative for a while from Queensland, which was a bit of a concern. Yeah, they had a lot of things going on, some political events, some floods, all those sorts of things that sort of took the shine off a little bit. But that swung around. I've got no statistical basis for making this or drawing this thesis, but my thesis will be that interstate migration will change as a result of COVID. In that used to be Melbourne and Sydney people retiring up on the coast, or at least semi-retiring, if you like. I think there'll be a greater proportion of people that are continue to work and could be even sort of work from home style, employment that will move from Melbourne and Sydney, I think particularly Melbourne, given the lockdowns have been so draconian, into that Brisbane market. So I think it's going to have, you know, once borders reopen, I think the lockdowns will be forgotten very quickly, and we'll be left with the statistics. And I think Australia will fare well comparative to other destinations. So I think once the borders open, immigration, overseas immigration will bounce back as strongly as the government wants it to. So I think demand will always exceed supply. And I think the other boost will really, and whether it persists long term, probably not, but I think sort of short to medium term boost will be Melburnians and Sydneysiders relocating into the Brisbane market, which will be kind of a unique characteristic, because as I said, normally they're older people retiring, but it'll be interesting to play out. But I think there's more upside than there is downside, without a doubt.
Well, interstate migration is a combination of people leaving and people coming. Brett, people used to leave Brisbane for the big higher paying jobs interstate. What's happening now?
I think that's a really good point, and Stuart's made some fantastic points there. And I think it comes back to jobs, really. He mentioned a negative period there and now a positive period. It's just jobs creation. In the middle of the decade, last decade, we had the floods, we had a mining downturn. A lot of people were leaving the state. There wasn't enough of those tier one jobs being created. And I think Brisbane's really starting to evolve. There's a huge number of jobs, and people won't be able to come to the state if we aren't creating jobs. I know it's a great place to live and there's affordability, but if we aren't creating jobs, then no one's going to come here. And I think there's going to be a lot of hype around the Olympics, but I think the hype will be in the jobs that it will create, the infrastructure and the projects. And again, those tier one higher level jobs where people maybe used to favour a Melbourne or a Sydney from overseas, or leave a Brisbane because the opportunities aren't available there.
Sure. We talked a bit about infrastructure as well, Brett. There has been quite a bit of infrastructure happening in Brisbane, and clearly there's going to be more because of the Olympics. But what have been the big infrastructure projects over the last little while?
Yeah, there's been three big ones. Obviously, the airport precinct is becoming a huge precinct in its own. It's the fastest growing area. Now we have a second runway. You wouldn't know it at the moment, obviously. We're not flying too much. But once that opens up again, there's a huge industrial. I know, you know, Boeing's out there. There's a huge move out there for a lot of businesses. We've also got that inner city infrastructure upgrade. So the Cross River Rail, which is quite exciting. It's almost like a New York subway style system that's going to get around the inner city that's being built at the moment. And then we've got the Brisbane Metro, which some of the suburbs to our south probably struggle a little bit without having a train line. And that's going to be a bus system that'll work very, very similar to a train line, going all the way out, 15, 20 Ks from the city. So that's going to benefit a lot of those kinds of areas. And then we've just got the little lifestyle things in the inner cities, like the green bridges, and just making, you know, lifestyling and getting around a little bit easier.
Well, I think the city was overdue for growth. It's actually missed the last property boom that Melbourne and Sydney had because of those local issues. But it has matured in recent years with billions of dollars spent on infrastructure. And I can see this being transformational and people wanting to be there. Stuart, you also mentioned another good reason for people moving to Brisbane, and that's affordability. Affordability is now starting to become a bit of an issue in Melbourne and Sydney. So clearly Brisbane's got an advantage.
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, your options as an investor or even as an owner-occupier, really, and I think the owner-occupier's part will obviously inform us around the story around overseas and interstate immigration. But as investors, you know, we sit back and go, well, we want to buy a house because we want, you know, a really strong land value component that, you know, whilst that's achievable in some apartment style properties, probably easier to achieve in a house. So then if you think about, well, it's either Melbourne, Sydney or Brisbane if you want to invest on the East Coast, and then you think about the budgets that you might need in order to make those investments, you know, I think without compromising, right, to get the highest quality asset, you know, how much do you really need to spend? Because anything's possible. You can buy a house for anything in any location, really, but I'm talking about investment grade properties, obviously. So in Melbourne, I think that's going to be challenging to do it for less than 1.2, 1.3. I mean, I'd be interested in if you agree with that, Michael.
Definitely.
I think Sydney, you've got to be approaching $2 million or north of that in order to get yourself a really good quality asset. Whereas in Brisbane, I reckon if you've got a budget of, say, 900 to 1.2, somewhere around that vicinity, I think you're going to be able to buy an asset and make very few compromises and get yourself a very high land value asset in a suburb that might be within sort of 10 or 12 Ks from the CBD in a good school zone, quiet street, strong land value, 400-500 square metres of land or something like that. So when you compare that, the cost of that asset and what that asset looks like in terms of its attributes compared to other markets, you know, it looks incredibly great value.
Well, when you buy an investment property, I think there are three things you should consider. The price, the budget, and that's really determined by the bank, location, and we really shouldn't compromise on that, and then the right property in that location. So you're right. Currently, with the way prices are, a lot of our clients at Metropole are priced out of Melbourne and Sydney, so therefore we have a holistic approach like I know you do with your clients. So it makes no difference to us. So a lot of our clients are being recommended to Brisbane, but I actually think you can get something at even a slightly better price point than you were suggesting, Brett. What would be a reasonable entry-level price point to get a house with some land? Because apartments, let's be blunt, apartments really aren't the lifestyle in Brisbane. They're not working too well in Brisbane, are they?
No, that's right. They haven't. And I think moving forward, they may struggle a little bit as well. There's still probably a little bit of oversupply issues and still a bit of stock there that will come onto the market. So, yeah, look, for an entry-level house, I mean, you're looking somewhere around that $700,000 mark at the moment, you know, to be comfortable in an area probably around that 10 to 12 kilometres from the CBD.
Right. And so for the median price in Brisbane is even less than that. So if you're talking about the 1.2 mark or the 1 million mark that Stuart's talking about, you're really in the prime suburbs within 4 or 5 kilometres of the CBD, where you'd only be able to buy a double garage in Sydney, Stuart.
That's right. Exactly.
A single garage, maybe.
Also, as an investor, it's not the most important consideration, but there's lower stamp duties and better yields, aren't there?
That's a really good point with the yields. You know, obviously the yields are a lot lower in Melbourne and Sydney, and we're still getting reasonably good yields here. So, yeah.
Stuart, stamp duty.
Yeah, stamp duty is a bit lower, particularly compared to Victoria, and land tax sort of commensurate, although it has Queensland has a higher land tax free threshold, so that's useful. These are good considerations. They're really icing on the cake. They're not really reasons to make an investment decision. I would rather pay a lot of land tax and make a whole lot of money in terms of compounding capital growth. So I'm not avoiding land tax, but it's just one of those considerations. And I think same with yield. You know, that's your starting point when you enter the property. It's good to measure yield, obviously, compared to its current value. But really, when we're talking about the practicalities, at the end of the day, it's the amount of dollars that is coming into your bank account. And if that starting point compared to interest rates is relatively high, it just becomes even more affordable from a cash flow perspective and allows us to really continue to strengthen our financial position to prepare ourselves for higher interest rates when arguably that investment is less affordable. So I guess another way to put it is there's a kind of window opportunity now where rates are low. And maybe if we don't take that opportunity, we look back in 5 or 10 years' time, we go, well, now it's going to cost me a lot more from a cash flow perspective.
Sure. Now, another factor, and I've been visiting Brisbane and the Gold Coast for a number of decades, and we've had an office in Brisbane. Metropole's had an office in Brisbane since 2006. It's no longer a big country town. It actually has changed. The culture has changed. You actually do make good coffees now. You do have outdoor living. You actually do have festivals and events that we can't have in Melbourne or Sydney at the moment. But I know you've taken us out to great restaurants, Brett. The culture has changed. You've grown up.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's a really good point. You know, some of the areas we have, we used to have one coffee shop or one nice restaurant, and now there's several, and you know, they're thriving, especially at the moment.
So, Stuart, we discussed some of the positives, reasons one should consider. What about the cons? Anything on the other side of the equation?
Well, I mean, if you have a look at population and, you know, because what you want to do really, growth is one thing and then risk is the other side of that coin. And so I think as investors, you need to focus on an equal amount on both. You know, what's my upside and what's my downside? If we think about kind of downside, what could go wrong? What you really want to do is invest in a location where notionally you've got 10 buyers for every one property, for example. There's that level of demand.
You want depth.
Yes, depth. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you want those 10 people from to be different types of different demographics. You know, there could be investors, first home buyers, upgraders, families, et cetera, right? So it stands to reason then if I'm looking to invest in a 10K radius from a CBD, that the larger the city, the larger there's going to be that imbalance of supply and demand. So if I'm in Sydney, for example, maybe there's 20 buyers for every one property. And if I'm in Melbourne, well, maybe there's 17 buyers and so forth. So, you know, look at population. Melbourne and Sydney are relatively similar in terms of population size, whereas Brisbane's about half that of Melbourne. So from a risk perspective, it just means there's notionally, you know, a slightly higher risk because that imbalance of supply won't be as robust as it is in other capital cities. Having said that, of course, as we've just spoken about, there's a few good headwinds in terms of population growth, supply and demand, and those sorts of things. So really, your most riskiest time as an investor is those initial years of holding that property, because you don't have a lot of equity in it yet, particularly if you've borrowed the full cost of the acquisition. Whereas if you've held a property for 20 years, you've got plenty of equity, you've got a safety buffer, you can kind of ride the wave of, you know, 5 years, 10 years of no growth because you know it's worked in the past. I guess from that perspective, if you wanted to invest in a location that had the highest probability of generating good returns over the next 5 years, which, by the way, I would caution people not to do. That's not the way to invest. It's a decade, multi-decade long journey, and that's what how you should make your, you know, play the long game. But if you wanted to consider which markets have the most amount of upside, I think Brisbane's really well placed. But you know, having said that, Michael, like you know what you said at the beginning, we're not just advocating Brisbane and as a by definition saying every other market's uninvestable. Because having said that, Michael, other markets like Melbourne and Sydney have been very resilient through COVID, and there is an imbalance of supply and demand continue in that market.
Oh, clearly, what we're doing is just having a deep dive into Brisbane to understand what's happening there. And there are some differences between Brisbane and the other states that I want to get into as well. Now, what I like looking at and what our research department looks at are leading indicators, what's happening in moving forward. So while the size of the population is important, we're also looking for economic growth because we're wanting areas which are going to have economic growth, which is going to lead to jobs growth and higher wages, and therefore the population is going to come in and some are going to start renting and then they're going to eventually buy there. So up till now, there were fewer job opportunities in Brisbane. I think the Olympics is going to underpin certain types of job opportunities. But one of your concerns in the past was, Stuart, that there aren't as many high-paying skill level 1 and 2 jobs in Brisbane.
That's correct. And it's still going to be true. I mean, it's not going to just magically turn around and all those jobs are going to leave Melbourne and Sydney. And I'm a strong believer in the long run, maybe not over the next couple of years, but in the long run, the whole sort of office and congregating in the CBD is not really going to change materially. Of course, I think a more hybrid model, a lot more people will adopt a hybrid model, but that's not to say all those offices are going to be vacant. But having said all that, one of the really interesting conversations I have with some execs and CEOs is that the acceptance of working from home has changed, even for particularly for higher level employees. It resonated a conversation with the CEO of a very large business said to me, I used to feel like I have to come into the office to kind of show my face, to show that I'm working, that I'm there and whatever. He goes, I don't feel that anymore. Everyone knows that, you know, we work just as hard at home as we do in the office. And I think that's true almost across the board. So I think what that will do is open up opportunities for still roles that might be, let's say, based in Sydney or Melbourne, for example, for people that live in Brisbane, and maybe they travel a couple of times a month, so they can do that face-to-face stuff. But now that there's greater acceptance, I think that's really going to open up. And of course, you know, population growth, infrastructure spend, $20 billion of infrastructure spend, that is going to grow the economy. You know, the whole build it and they will come kind of analogy. So it is changing, and I think that change will accelerate as a result of COVID.
Now, I'd like to talk about the elephant in the room, the Olympic Games, and I'm not sure that it actually will guarantee house price growth, and I'd like to have your opinion. But before we do, since we're talking about investing in Brisbane, and Brisbane people know how Brisbane real estate work, but a lot of our listeners are not from Brisbane. Brett, there are some things that if you're going to be an interstate buyer, you should understand about Brisbane and buying investment properties in Brisbane. What would you caution somebody who's not familiar with the Brisbane market about?
Yeah, good point. Particularly those coming from down south and in bigger markets. Brisbane doesn't have the urban sprawl of a Sydney or a Melbourne. So sometimes you can get away with buying, you know, 15 or 20 kilometres away from Sydney and Melbourne, and you're still getting into a relatively mature market in a mature area. But in Brisbane, that doesn't happen. You know, it's really confined to that 10 to 15 kilometre ring. That will change over time, but it's not going to be as fast as everybody thinks. So that's a bit of an issue. And we often get people to say we're buying, you know, maybe an area halfway from the Gold Coast. Well, we're buying in Brisbane, but that's not actually Brisbane. It's not Brisbane City Council. And likewise, there's some other areas on the water, you know, north and south of the city as well, but they don't have the big employment hubs and the infrastructure and the lifestyle that that the other areas have. So that's the first word of caution. I guess the other thing is probably more of a detail thing is looking for flooding and overland flow and all those kinds of things are really, really critical. And, you know, I can tell you half a dozen suburbs we're buying. I mean, the area we're in at the moment in Clayfield is an amazing suburb, similar to the suburbs we've bought for both of you guys in you know, the Cannon Hills and the Indooroopilly and the Toowongs. Great suburbs, but we only buy in 30% of the suburb. Because you've got flooding or you've got an overland flow issue. We don't buy on main roads or train lines or anything like that. And the zoning's starting to change as well. So we've got to keep an eye on zoning because you don't want to wake up one day and have 100 apartments sitting behind you as well. So there's a number of those factors we look for.
I think the other point to make is that there isn't one Brisbane property market, as you say, just like there isn't one Melbourne or Sydney market. And the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast aren't Brisbane, are they?
No, they're not. Either is Toowoomba. I mean, that's southeast Queensland, absolutely. But there's still a lot of availability of land. There's different economies. I know the Gold Coast is more of a vertical city. It's definitely not Brisbane. And even some areas that you think are Brisbane still aren't Brisbane. And that's the mistake a lot of investors make.
Interestingly, school catchments are very important in Brisbane, I think similar to the other capital cities.
Absolutely. I've got a good case study there. We actually had, would you believe, a property we subdivided. It wasn't us, but we were looking at a property that had been subdivided. And funnily enough, one house was in the best school catchment and the other house was in the other school catchment.
That's interesting. So the zoning changes in the middle of a street in Brisbane, yeah, doesn't it? So you can't assume that you can pull down the old house to build a new house because Brisbane is gentrifying and there are a lot of new dwellings coming up. But just because there is one down the road or across the road or even next door, you've really got to understand the zoning.
That's it. And you can't just assume you're in the catchment for the school. So obviously the people did their homework. The one that was in the good catchment sold for $100,000 more and they were two identical properties.
Now, that's really interesting, isn't it? But similarly, we know that tenants will pay more to be there to put their kids in school catchments as well. The other interesting thing, because the property that we bought personally just recently, we were going to pull down the old house and build two houses on there, two townhouses, and we do that for a lot of our clients. In Melbourne and Sydney, you would assume you've got right to actually have a sewer and a drain and water facilities in your property. And when I mentioned that to Stuart the other day, that's not a, by right in Brisbane, is it? Sometimes you've got to pay your neighbour to get access to those things.
Yeah, no, sewer and stormwater is overrated. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, Stuart, the property that we bought, the sewer line goes right through the middle, not backwards and forwards, in the middle of the property, and the house sits over it, which in Melbourne or Sydney, you couldn't build. But in Brisbane, there's new properties on the left and the right that have been built over it, and we're going to have the right to build over a sewer easement, which we wouldn't get the permission to do here. You've really got to understand the rules in Brisbane differently, don't you?
That's the importance of having that perspective, that on-the-ground perspective, and knowing one side of the street from the other, or what you can do on that particular site just because it's directly opposite another site. It's that local knowledge that's really, really critical.
The other interesting thing about Brisbane, it's probably not different interstate, is the importance of public transport. I think you were years ahead of Melbourne and Sydney with your tunnels and your good roads. You built them before it was needed, but now they're starting to get a little bit crowded.
Yeah, look, we learn a lot from Sydney and Melbourne, and certainly we haven't had that huge population growth as Stuart pointed out earlier, particularly over the last decade. But I think I saw somewhere there's another 500,000 cars on the road coming in the next decade. So something with public transport is going to be absolutely critical, and I think you'll really start to see those areas and suburbs outperform in the next decade, as the areas without those, that infrastructure is going to probably be less preferred.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Olympics, because we know that in July, the International Olympic Committee declared Brisbane's going to be the host of the 2032 Olympics. And as we said, it's expected to provide significant economic advantage, not only to Brisbane, but to Queensland, to Southeast Queensland, because it's actually not Brisbane alone, but Southeast Queensland that's going to host the Olympics. What's it going to do to property values? Is it going to make a difference? And we do have some precedents, because we can look at the Commonwealth Games, we can look at the Sydney Olympics, and we can look at Olympics overseas. And house price growth isn't guaranteed, is it, Stuart?
No, I mean, you know, you've got to think about the economic consequences of things like this, which I think are probably the most important. So obviously there's a massive injection of economic activity, building and so forth before the games, and then obviously during the games. And obviously it's a great marketing exercise for tourism. So I think there's some flow-on effects that you know, macro sort of flow-on effects that obviously add to the property market and property growth. But I don't think I would be making an investment decision because of the Olympics. I just think it's like, I mean, we've mentioned a whole host of different pros and cons today, and I think it's just one of those, you know, just adds kind of icing on the cake. It does underpin economic growth, of course, because, you know, now the government's got to spend leading up to that, and that will create jobs, that will create demand, naturally, the more money in the economy, it needs to be spent somewhere, and Australians love property, so whether it's going to be spent on improvements which help lift values, or imbalance the supply and demand. So I think it's good. I think it'll be a positive on property from a macro level, but I'm not jumping off my chair buying bought on the weekend. I didn't do that because the Olympics is coming.
Sure. What's your thoughts, Brett?
Yeah, look, I completely agree with Stuart. I actually think there's going to be a bit of a hype factor, and we're kind of seeing it already, where people are just going to buy there because of the Olympics. They think it's just going to be a magic bullet. So I think we will see a bit of that from, I guess, more emotional, uneducated type of buyers, and they tend to make rational decisions as well. Irrational decisions. So I think that could be a bit of an issue, but there's no guarantee. But again, just continuing on the jobs theme for me, I think just creating more jobs and creating more of those tier one jobs, that's where I see the opportunity and the longevity, you know, really turning Brisbane into that new world city we've kind of spoken about before.
Well, that's actually an interesting thought. So we've got two world-class cities in Australia. We've got Melbourne and Sydney, and their Olympic Games is now going to put Brisbane on the roadmap. But in many ways, it's what people class a new world city. It's developing, it's changing to become getting its place with a lot of other developing cities around the world. There's been some numbers and figures put around what's going to happen, and it's thought that it will support, the Olympic Games are going to support 91,600 full-time jobs equivalent in Brisbane or Southeast Queensland. Interestingly, it's also going to create other jobs around Australia. There's going to be supportive jobs there. But I think the legacy, what it's going to leave after the Olympics, is going to be important. The infrastructure, if they get it right, the accommodation, what's going to happen to the Olympic villages if they do it correctly, and placing Brisbane on the roadmap, on the sites for international tourists, that's going to be pretty important. People are going to want to come to, hey, that's the city where the Olympics were. Having said that, Pam and I visited Rio de Janeiro a couple of years ago and saw the Olympic city, or what's left of it. It was actually disappointing. They had lovely graffiti, beautiful, nice organised graffiti on the walls, but the rest of it was had become quite a slum. And I know that Homesbush in Sydney also had some issues afterwards. It didn't have the huge property growth that some people had expected. So, Stuart, what were your suggestions? Anything further about Brisbane and the Olympics?
I'd just like to jump on a comment you made earlier at the beginning, Michael, about how Brisbane has changed over the last few decades. I lived in Brisbane for about 6 months when I joined the army in between leaving school and going to uni, and I was at Enoggera Barracks there. I mean, that's probably 25 years ago. And it was very much a country town at that stage. And my sister lives in Brisbane, so I've got a really good reason to travel there relatively regularly, at least pre-COVID I did. One thing that really stands out to me, and perhaps it tells you more about me than it does about Brisbane, but I've noticed, you know, that you could never buy a decent wine in Brisbane. You'd sit down to dinner and they'd have on, everyone's drinking beer, and then you want to buy a decent wine, and the best wine was $15 a bottle. Not to suggest that you need to spend lots of money to get a good wine, but, you know, there wasn't that sort of broad selection. The most recent time I was in Brisbane, must be now 2 years ago, thanks COVID, that was the thing that really stood out. You could not only get, I mean, the restaurants and quality of restaurants and so forth have changed, but, you know, the selection and so forth has changed. And whilst that might seem like a really kind of pointless anecdote, it tells us, you know, how much that city has changed. And there's lots of reasons that people always mention the cafe culture and the restaurants and those sorts of things of Melbourne, and it creates an atmosphere and it creates a culture that becomes really important when people making decisions where they want to live. And that's been absent, I think, Brisbane in previous decades, where it's now got it. And I think it's sort of almost to some extent coming of age. And that will help with those tier one jobs, you know, the attraction of you know, relocating from Melbourne or Sydney and going to Brisbane. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of upside there with not a lot of downside, even if you're just playing the long game, but even if you're looking at the shorter to medium term as well.
Now, one of the things I just thought about as I was listening to your conversation was that we talked about the difference between the Brisbane property markets and interstate. Auctions are a big part of Melbourne property culture, not at the moment because of COVID, and similarly with Sydney. They haven't been as big a part of Brisbane property market sales. And even though auction clearance rates are at boom time levels in Brisbane, on a good weekend, you'd have 80 to 100 rather than 1,000 auctions like we have in Melbourne when the market's actually working. So what are you finding on the ground at the moment, Brett? What's happening with properties and how are you finding them?
Yeah, wow. That's a really good question, Michael. Where do I start? It's certainly ramping up, and you're 100% right. There hasn't been an auction market, but they're certainly transitioning into an auction market just because of the competition levels. I think this time last year, we're about 30% down on stock levels and demand's just skyrocketed. So, you know, incredibly, incredibly emotional, frustrated time for a lot of buyers, and that they're paying silly money in silly locations to get the job done, I guess. So it is a very, you know, very difficult search if you're trying to find something that is investment grade. Luckily enough, we do have access to the off-market properties, not just the ones on realestate.com. So that certainly helps. But it is a very, very frantic time at the moment, and people are paying good money for good properties. And auction clearance rates and auctions are becoming more part and parcel of the landscape.
Oh, very much so. So we're not suggesting look for a bargain in Brisbane. You won't find one. It's a very informed market, but you've also got to be careful what you pay. And you'll remember the auction that when I was last in Brisbane for Pam and me, I bid for myself. And our competition, Stuart, interestingly, was one of the agents from this very large agency on the phone speaking to a buyer's agent in Melbourne who was representing a client. Neither the buyer's agent nor the client saw the property, and he was engaging the local selling agent, the one who had the listing, to represent him and bid at the on that property. So this is some of the FOMO that we're – and by the way, I had deeper pockets than him, but I wasn't prepared to keep going because it was a silly price and he paid a record price. Now, I think in 10 years' time, because it was a prime property, he's not going to the purchaser won't regret the decision they made. But having said that, I think we've got to be careful because of FOMO, Stuart.
I mean, Michael, that's ridiculous. And I would say to anyone that's considering employing the services of a buyer's agent, to my mind, one of the things that you're paying for is that local area knowledge and that local area knowledge that is accumulated over several years and several different market conditions. So I would be saying to people, investors out there, that if any buyer's agents are telling you they're going to buy a property remotely, forget about it. My advice is don't waste your money. You absolutely need someone on the ground that's been on the ground for many years. That's what you're paying for, is their experience.
Brett?
100%. As I said before, you're at a severe disadvantage if you're just relying on properties on market, because there's not a lot of them at the moment. So you've got to have access to all properties for sale.
Now, in the old days, buyer's agents used to fly in and fly out. And I know you used to jokingly say, Brett, that they're the ones that, they, not having the local perspective, they don't recognise why we've avoided those particular properties. And, of course, while you and I are biased because of our team at Metropole, there are a lot of other very good professional buyer's agents in Brisbane. I know when I first started the office in 2006, there were two other ones. It's a profession that's well respected, but you've then got to, again, not go with one of the young, enthusiastic amateurs. There's other really good professional firms out there as well, aren't there, Brett?
Yeah, sure. It made a good point about experience and you know, rather decades of experience, because we've met a lot of buyer's agents who are painters or accountants and, you know, for 20 years, and they do a one-week course and all of a sudden they're spending other people's money. It's quite frightening.
So in summary, the Brisbane property market is buoyed for a number of good years ahead, as well as Melbourne, Sydney, and look, Adelaide, Canberra, all the markets are doing okay at the moment, but Brisbane has got a number of things that's going to underpin it moving forward. But you've got to be selective. You've got to choose the right location and the right property in the right location. And if you want to find out more about it, Brett and his team at Metropole would love to have a chat with you. Just go to metropole.com.au and find out. And Brett, despite being a national director, because you're a national director, when you see clients, I know more than half the people that you speak to, you actually don't direct to Brisbane.
No, no preference. I'm a bit of a numbers nerd, like probably the rest of us here. And we make decisions based on facts, data and numbers rather than a gut feel or what may happen.
And Stuart, you've got a holistic approach to wealth creation, and that's one of the reasons I love your work and referring clients to you. So just tell listeners who may not really understand what ProSolutions does a little bit more about what your team does.
I believe that taking a holistic approach to building wealth is the way to harness the most amount of value. So, and the reason for that is that a lot of factors are very interrelated. So if I'm going to go and buy a property, for example, I need to think about, you know, how does that impact and integrate with my overall plan? I need to think about finance. I need to think about tax, all those sorts of things. So we have no vested interest in any in what our clients invest in. We don't care whether it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, property, shares, cash, whatever. We're completely independent, but we make sure we take a very holistic approach, looking after all our clients' affairs, building a really long-term strategy, and then leaving it to the professionals, which is us, to identify all the risks and opportunities and help clients navigate through that.
Sure, and you've got your own great podcast that I enjoy listening to, Investopoly. So just have a look wherever you listen to this podcast and subscribe to Stuart's Investopoly podcast. And we discuss some of the topics again here on our regular monthly chats, but that's okay because it just brings a different depth and perspective. So Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Brett. Look forward to catching up with you again individually for our regular podcast chats. And maybe we'll get together and do it again, because Brett, while based in Brisbane, actually looks after our buyer's agents team in Sydney and Melbourne. So maybe we should actually have a look at the other states in the next couple of months as well.
Yeah, we'd love to. Enjoyed our time. Thanks, Michael. Thank you, Stuart.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been lots of fun.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Over the years, I've had the privilege of working with some very successful business people, property investors and entrepreneurs. And I've also met some, I guess, not so successful people. And I've found that in general, people fall into one of two groups. Those who make excuses and those who don't. Now, the ones who make excuses, they don't start that way. I mean, no one's born talented at making excuses, but over the years, they learn to get out of things. They learn how to blame others, the economy, their parents, the teachers, the system, pretty much anything they can deflect the blame on. These give them the excuses they need. And of course, there's the other group of people, those who don't make excuses, or rather won't. Now, we all have our difficulties, and some days we feel like making excuses. But winners stop themselves. They don't make excuses. They just get the job done. Interestingly, we all have similar capabilities. Yes, we've got similar capabilities to get things done or not, and to make excuses about it. And when you wake up in the morning, you get to choose which route you take. Now, I recently read an insightful quote that said, the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that smart people hate doing the same thing that unsuccessful people hate doing. But successful people do it anyway. So as you go on this journey we call life, you're going to get a chance to back out and make excuses or not. You have the choice. You decide. Well, I hope you've now got a better understanding of what's likely to be ahead for the Brisbane property markets. Now, if you got some benefit from this show and you know somebody else who's interested in investing, whether it's in Brisbane or wherever, why not tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast so we can work together at helping more Australians become financially independent? That's the aim of my podcast, my regular blogs, my posts on social media, to help others develop a level of financial security by becoming more fluent about these matters. You can catch me in between these shows on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And if you want to get some more information about property investment success and money, I've got some bonuses for you. Go to podcastbonus.com.au. I'll leave a link in the show notes, podcastbonus.com.au. And there's a bundle of books and reports for you as well. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropol, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropol to help you?